Okay, everyone find a seat. We're going to call the meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order. And the clerk will just note the roll. Everyone's busy, so we won't call roll. We'll note the roll. I assume everyone will be here eventually. We do have a number here now. Reminder, there's coffee here for anyone who needs a cup. I understand it's chilly outside, so help yourself. Another reminder, if you got your cell phone on and it rings, we get a buck for the coffee pot, and if you answer it, we get $5, hopefully. That's the only rules we have in this committee. So, Mr. Cleary, shut your cell phone off. And beyond that, members, we have a full schedule today. I know we have people coming and going in committee. Most of these bills will be heard for possible inclusion. So we do have amendments on some of these bills. So we're going to try and move as rapidly as we can, but certainly we will take our time for whatever questions or comments you have. With that, Representative Magnus. We're ready to vote. I believe the commissioner's here for you, too. Is that right, if you want to come down? Did you have an amendment, Representative Magnus?
Yes, I do. Chairman? Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for hearing the bill this morning. It's a fine piece of legislation. And I do have an amendment to put the bill in order. I'd like to present it to you.
Representative Magnus, first of all, I would move, Representative Magnus moves House File 2077 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and there is an A1 amendment, I believe. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Magnus moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the order that he would like. Any discussion of that? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed. Amendment's adopted. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My bill creates the Next Generation Energy Board. The board would administer the investment of $9 million each fiscal year from 2010 to 2020 to devise and implement the Next Generation of Biofuels initiative we're trying to do. Of these annual appropriations, Mr. Chairman, $6 million is dedicated to financing and investment incentives, and $3 million is dedicated to direct payments to facilities producing biofuels. The board would be the Commissioners of Agriculture, and with our amendment today, the Commissioner of Natural Resources, Commissioner of Department of Commerce, Pollution Control Agency, and the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development, plus two members of the Senate appointed by the Majority Leader, two members of the House appointed by the Speaker. Mr. Chairman, with that, I think I'll turn it over to Commissioner Hugesson to further discuss the bill.
And members, as they address us, if you have questions, let us know. We'll ask them as we go. I think it's easier. And I have one right away, Representative Magnus, for you to think about, and the Commissioner. Instead of two members of the House appointed by the Speaker, perhaps we want a member from the Agriculture Finance Committee and one member appointed by the Speaker. So since we think this is kind of our ownership here, and certainly the funding comes through this committee, while we may want to see someone from Commerce or Natural Resources or other committees involved, the Speaker could make that decision. But I just ask you to think about maybe a member of this committee would be appropriate, too, in the House and the Senate, either instead of or in addition to. Mr. Commissioner, welcome.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I have
Hamilton.
As far as on the amendment question.
Okay.
Representative Magnus, we changed on page 1, line 14, from Commissioner of Commerce to the Commissioner of Natural Resources.
We added it.
Are we going to add then on the second page also an appointment from Natural Resources?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, that's on the second board. Actually, the board creates two. The bill creates two boards.
Okay.
That's a different appropriation than in Section 2, but I'd have the commissioner address that when we
Busy
talks about it a little bit.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Hugesson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I'm Gene Hugesson, Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you for the opportunity to come today and present some testimony for Representative Magnus's bill, which is the governor's proposal for the next-gen aspect of where we're going with renewable fuels. As I testified earlier in this committee several weeks ago, what we're looking at from the administration is that certainly when we're talking about renewable fuels, corn, ethanol, soybean biodiesel have done a tremendous job in terms of getting us to where we are, but we also know that we're going to have to be moving beyond this to the next generation of sources for renewable fuels, and that certainly is the cellulosic approach. One of the challenges that we have is that we need to remind, I think, everyone, is that it has taken us a considerable amount of time to get to where we are today with the technology in the ethanol and the biodiesel arena. It's going to take us a little while before we're in a comparable position for the cellulosic approach as well. And that's why in the governor's proposal we've really broken this down into two different aspects. The first one has to do with what we would call the long-range goal in terms of where we go. And the board that Representative Magnus has referenced here that now includes the Department of Natural Resources and Representative Hamilton, the reason the DNR was interested in being part of this particular board is that as we look ahead down the road, knowing that some of that cellulosic material may include some of the possible trees and or more likely some of the grasses kinds of things, there's interest from the DNR in this area as well. So that's why they requested to be part of this particular board. My understanding is that they were not as concerned or interested in the other board. And so that's why it's just a reference to this particular board at this particular time. The idea behind the approach that the administration is going here is that at this point, we do not have all the details, all the facts in place to make some of the decisions that are going to have to be made in determining how the state is going to incentivize some of the approaches that we would use. For that reason, we would envision that this board, not necessarily made up of these members that are listed here, but people appointed by these members, which will consist of more expertise than we necessarily have ourselves, will gather together to make some decisions and perhaps take some testimony, do some further research in terms of what would be the best parameters to use as to how we actually would award these grants. We see the $9 million a year beginning in 2010 and going on for the next 10 years as somewhat similar to the producer payments that we've used for ethanol, but perhaps broken down a little more into two different areas. Some of it would go direct payments to the facilities themselves, but the bulk of the money would be actually used for helping to put the financing package together for these particular facilities. Now, we'd be very candid and say that this $9 million is not necessarily going to fund a whole lot of projects. But from our perspective, we would see these projects as being demonstration kinds of facilities. This would be a means in which perhaps three different projects would be picked based on various technologies, various geographics, whatever this board would come together with and decide. And then they would have the opportunity to bring that back to the legislature next year by February 1st with some information that they would have put together. The legislation also calls that this would be an annual update that would continue beyond that so that if, in fact, we would come with recommendations for the legislature to consider on an annual basis, certainly a review of what has taken place, and I would like to think of it as an accountability time, but also perhaps as new technology comes online, we might be looking at making some changes or recommendations as time goes on.
Mr. Commissioner, to that point, are you suggesting then that for dollars in either section that this board or panel act kind of like a LCMR panel where they actually put together the recommendations and then come to us for the final stamp of approval? Or are you recommending the opposite, that we give a pot of money to the board and then they just simply allow the grants as they see fit?
Mr. Chairman, members, I think probably what I would see is that for this first year that they would come back to the legislature with their recommendations of where they would envision this going. Because I think as we start out on this, we want broad ownership with where this should go. And that's really why this panel is as encompassing as it is. And to your point, Mr. Chairman, earlier, in terms of how the membership would be determined from the various bodies, you know, from our perspective, if it doesn't offend the leadership in the House or the Senate, I would have no problem if both members were picked by the committees, kind of thing. But that's something that I think you and leadership perhaps can talk among yourselves. And so from our perspective, that is not the issue. I think the idea behind here was that we just wanted to make sure that the legislature felt empowered by this as well in terms of putting together representation. And again, I would suggest that the representation may not be membership themselves, but actually people that with expertise,
right,
that the bodies as well as the commissioners here would include as well. This, as I mentioned before, members, is more of the long-range plan. The immediately, though, we do see some things that can and should be done. That's why in Section 2 there's an appropriation for $5 million in each of the next 2 years that would actually go to existing facilities. And you notice that the legislation does not necessarily limit this to renewable fuel facilities, such as existing ethanol or biodiesel facilities. It's a possibility that, for instance, this could be done with a municipal electric plant or somebody else that's out there that would want to take advantage of some of the renewable gas, cellulose, biomass material to use in lieu of most notably probably natural gas or even coal, other types of uses that they're currently using to generate their power source. But this would be done as it relates to the parameters as it talks about in the legislation in terms of how we're trying to reduce the dependency on fossil energy and then in the process create a new market for what we would see as the biomass material that would be generated by farmers. In other words, we right now know that we do not have an infrastructure in place to provide, for instance, a lot of a grass material or corn stalks or even a wheat straw or that kind of thing, whereas this process would begin to be able to utilize that product within the next 2 years here in a way that would then set the stage for having that material available on a wider scale and the infrastructure in place to then move into the next phase of the long-term approach to providing biomass in the production of cellulosic ethanol. So, Mr. Chairman, members, while this particular facility is not necessarily a real complicated, the idea here is to create it in such a way that allows some flexibility as we go on, because as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of things we don't know yet, and we're going to have to work with that as we proceed ahead. You'll also notice that the governor has made it very clear that he wants to do what he can to make sure that these facilities that we're working with will be locally owned to the degree that we can, so that there's the ability for that participation at the local level. This has worked very well with our ethanol and biodiesel facilities, and we want to see that model continued as well. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would be glad to entertain any questions.
Representative Heiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I start offering oral amendments, Representative Magnus, going back to your comments earlier, Representative Junkie, I think we should have something in there, two members of the Senate Ag Committee, two members of the House. I think that would be an easy oral amendment to do. But I'm looking at the, if you look at line 1.22, Representative Magnus, I would like to see something in there, and it's up to you, I'm not going to do it unless you want it. Examine the future of fuels and their byproduct. I've always had a problem with, we do a lot of research on ethanol, we do a lot of research, but we don't do any research on the DDGs. We don't do any research of what happens if we take the corn stover off the field. Does the field still need that? Does that soil still need that? Likewise with native grasses or whatever. We take, and don't put back in. And there's got to have an effect. So I'm just wondering, we do part of it. I mean, and I had mentioned so many times that we could bring up the cost of creating ethanol in this country. We could take the cost, we could cut it in half if we cut the consumption of natural gas. Whether we go from dry to wet would be immense. And I think that's something we're oftentimes forgetting. But just a suggestion, Representative Magnus.
And members and Representative Magnus and Commissioner and Representative Heidecker, maybe this will help too. Representative Magnus, I would ask you, I've assigned the daunting task to Mr. Colby Sullivan to try and put together language similar to what you have here. Mm-hmm. We've got the next-gen language that the governor and the commissioner brought forward. A lot of it I agree with 100%. We've also got language that Representative Peterson has in one of his bills on how to distribute grants. We've also looking at some language, frankly, that's in place for federal grants, which the commissioner may be familiar with. And an example of where we have to rectify this is on 1.24, for example, where the commissioner talked about locally owned. He says locally owned, and that's it. The Peterson bill says locally owned is 60% local ownership or more. Federal grants actually stipulate local ownership as 51% or more. So we need to rectify what local ownership means. I guess I'd ask you, since it's your bill, Representative Magnus, to help this committee out and work with Colby and try and see if between you and me and Heidecker and the committee itself, we can put together some language that incorporates the best ideas from all of these things in a manner that everyone will appreciate. We'll put that in our bill next week, Tuesday or Wednesday, when it comes out. And then, Representative Heidecker, if it's not quite in the right shape, then we can amend at that time rather than trying to go through it right now. Would you agree to that, Representative Magnus?
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Heidecker's right. We do need to study the byproducts of this effort. And again, we're facing a lot of unknowns here, Mr. Chairman, committee members. We don't know, for example, what exactly the federal farm bill is going to be. Right. We do know there is going to be significant language in there dealing with energy, and for us to, I think, attempt to put the cart in front of the horse with some of the proposals we're seeing here now,
right,
is not a road I would suggest we go down. I think we need to sit back and take some time and have this board and maybe others take a look at just what happens here.
And I think we've talked to the commissioner about that as being as nondescript as possible while still setting up a program, because we may be back here next year rewriting some of this based on the federal farm bill. You're absolutely right. Representative Heidecker.
Yes, and I know Representative Hansen had a bill, too. I'd like to see that incorporated, that thought, into here as well, because I really think we need to look at the byproduct.
Mm-hmm.
Not on yours, here again, I'm going to keep bringing it up. And I think we need to look at that, and I think yours is a good idea as well. And I think we need to bring it forth, but we need to also look at the byproduct.
Mr. Chairman, if I just might comment, certainly from the administration standpoint, we stand ready to work with you. Assistant Commissioner Bull from Commerce is here today as well, and certainly between Ag and Commerce and the other agencies, we will be part of that. I would just mention that in the second board that I referenced here in Section 2, it does talk about 51% ownership there. I think it was probably left out of the first part simply because that that would be part of what that committee or the board would come back with recommendation for by February 1st of next year. I also would like to see incorporated when we get to that point of handing out, at least in the bigger awards, that something that would be in there regarding ownership, that if in fact that ownership does no longer become local, that if it is sold off, the state would be able to recoup the money that it invested in that as well. So those are things that I think will take some time to put together that can be part of that. As it relates to the byproducts, certainly I think that's noteworthy. I would just comment that there certainly is research, though, that's going on right now with the byproducts. One of the challenges with the byproduct research is that we don't know all the byproducts yet that could be possible. Mm-hmm. And so that sort of thing will develop as time goes on. Certainly the university and others that have been involved with that as it relates to DDGs, for instance, as well, has been very active as it looking what it can be done for livestock feed.
All right. Very good. Representative Hans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I think this is a good idea. I have a question just on the folks that would be administering the grants, and wondering if it would be, we want to make sure that there's no confusion or no conflict of interest by the people who would be administering the grants. And I'm wondering if you would be supportive of maybe there's some boilerplate conflict of interest language that's elsewhere in statute, or maybe making them public officials so they would report their assets. I just want to make sure that anybody who is voting on administering the grants does not have an investment in in any of the things that they're doing, and just wondering your opinion on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I think that's certainly a worthwhile position to consider. With that in mind, I have deliberately stayed away from any ethanol plant or biodiesel plant investments for that reason, just because that the appearance does not seem real proper. But, you know, recognizing that the board or the people that are going to be doing this in many cases are going to be technical types of people that probably are not going to be as involved as some folks, but I think that certainly we can pull some of that material out and look at it and possibly be part of that could be part of the discussion that Chairman Junkie referred to as when this gets put together.
Representative Hansen. Mr. Chairman, if we maybe could have staff work on just some boilerplate that I'm sure exists out there on conflict of interest.
Conflict of interest. I'm sure he noted that. Any other questions? I do have one other testifier on this bill, then we're going to move to the dill bill. Jerry Larson. Thank you, Commissioner.
Hi, Jerry.
Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Jerry Larson. I'm a farmer. I've been involved in the ethanol industry from the early days and an investor in several plants. I just want to draw your attention to line 2.12 under the use of technologies. My concern is that there's several technologies that we can replace fossil energy. And so the term gasification is certainly good. I'm in favor of the bill, but I think that needs to be broader. For example, the use of methane. We've just been talking about the conversion of DDGs, and the methane is certainly one of the opportunities. And so my plea is for a broader terminology than just the word gasification. Thank you.
Good. We'll make a note of that, and staff has that, too. Thank you. Any final comments, Representative Magnus?
No, I think pretty much it, we've explained the bill, Mr. Chairman, as we see it.
And we'll work on this with Colby and other people, and hopefully by the end of the week come up with some language that we can all agree with.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dill. And Beard is on deck. Representative Dill, I tell you something. While you're here, I promise you that unlike your committee last night that I was at, I will not close my eyes once during your testimony.
Representative Junkie, I was with you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm so used to listening to you and Representative Regina.
Okay, Beard, you're up.
Of a natural state. Kind of a natural state,
Mr. Chair. That
was good. Representative Dill, welcome to the Agriculture Committee. And does anyone want to move this bill? Uh-oh, we got a problem.
I think Peterson.
Representative Peterson moves that House File 774 come before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome, Representative Dill. We're happy to have you and your guests here.
You know, I used to be a part of this Ag Committee, Mr.
That's
Chairman,
true.
And enjoyed learning a lot about animal agriculture and the 70-20 laws and all those wonderful things.
And you have some farms up there,
yeah,
Representative Dill.
I've got a few dairy farms up there for sure. Okay, well, Mr. Chair, we have an oral amendment to the bill, which I think you have before. Would you like me to read the oral amendment for the tape?
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chair, on House File 774, line 1.15, after the word cellulosic, which only appears once in that line, about the middle of the line, we strike the word waste and insert material.
Cellulosic material, it should read.
Correct. And then after the word produce, we would strike the rest of the line and insert biofuels or bioenergy. And this matches up, this language then matches up, I believe, with the Eakin bill, which is a more broadly based bill.
So Representative Peterson moves that on line 1.15, after cellulosic, strike the word waste, insert material, and after produce, strike the rest of the language in that line and insert biofuels or bioenergy.
And then strike, Mr. Chairman, all of the language on line 1.16.
And delete 1.16. Everyone have that? Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? It's adopted. Representative Dill.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Datko is here from the Boysport Reservation. If you have any questions about the bill, or he can give you a brief explanation of the bill and what they intend to do, rather than me going on, and then I can go into my normal state here before you.
Very good. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie and representatives. My name is Andrew Datko. I am the CEO of the Boysport Development Corporation, which is the business division of the Boysport Band of Chippewa Tribal Government. Just by way of a little bit of background, the Boysport Reservation is located in northeastern Minnesota. It's about 50 miles south of International Falls, about 20 miles west of the city of Orr. The reservation is composed of two parts. The main part is at Net Lake. There's also a smaller portion on Lake Vermilion, about 55 miles to the southeast. Boys Fort owns and operates the Fortune Bay Resort Casino located on Lake Vermilion. Boys Fort does not make per capita payments. Instead, all gaming revenues are reinvested into infrastructure, government services and programs such as education and health care, and economic diversification. And that's really the purpose of this bill here today. The band's strategic business plan focuses on diversifying and strengthening the economy of our region. And I'm here today to talk to you about a new collaboration with tremendous potential for the future. We are proposing a cellulosic biofuels demonstration facility on our reservation in Net Lake. We believe cellulosic biofuels has the potential to create jobs in the area, enhance the environment, decrease future pressure on food supplies, and decrease our dependence on foreign energy. And I also want to add here that even though the band does have some successful businesses that it operates, most of its economic activity has been located on the Lake Vermilion portion of the reservation. The bulk of the population of the reservation is located at Net Lake, about an hour's drive away. And as a result, access to those jobs has been very difficult. And unemployment on the Net Lake Reservation is estimated to still be approximately 40%. So part of the purpose of this is to get some economic development at that more distressed portion of the reservation. This demonstration facility that we're proposing would convert cellulosic biomass into biofuels such as ethanol and butanol. We want to work with the state and our neighboring communities to make this project a success. We are here today seeking $300,000 in state assistance for a technical and economic feasibility study for the project. The study we propose will examine many factors, including an assessment of the sustainable biomass resources on tribally controlled lands and within the surrounding area, such as logging residues, forest trimmings, pulp mill and sawmill waste, and processed municipal waste. Optimal project size, configuration, and location, technology options and system configurations, siting and environmental considerations and permitting criteria, end market options for the types of biofuels to be produced, possible synergistic alliances with energy users and biomass producers, and pro forma financial projections and a long-term business plan. We have done extensive preliminary research into this emerging field with the assistance of SEH consulting engineers and the Natural Resources Research Institute of the University of Minnesota at Duluth. We have prepared a detailed scoping document that identifies specific technologies to be examined in greater detail, with the end result being the selection of the most appropriate technology and development of the demonstration plant. There's a copy of the executive summary of that scoping document that was distributed to the members, and it's a fairly lengthy document that goes into detail on this emerging technology. In keeping with the deep respect and spiritual relationship Native Americans have with their environment, Boys Fort is committed to generating sustainable economic development that is environmentally appropriate. We know that corn-derived ethanol is an important fuel, but there is already beginning to be competition for corn as fuel versus corn as food. Our proposal would generate energy from renewable local resources that do not hold value as competing vital resources, such as farm commodities. We intend to develop a project that is environmentally suitable and sized appropriately for the available feedstock resources. The scale of this project will be in the order of 1 to 4 million gallons of biofuels annually. We believe that we can operate this facility sustainably with locally produced renewable sources of biomass feedstock. We are therefore requesting your assistance in the spirit of cooperation and partnership to help move this project forward. We have already committed substantial time and effort to the project and strongly believe that upon completion of the feasibility study, we will be able to leverage state and BAND's commitment to obtain federal funds to develop the demonstration plant. And with that, I'll conclude my remarks and answer any questions that you may have.
Mr. Danko, when do you expect to have the study done, if you were successful in getting some money?
The timeline on the study is about 9 months.
Okay. One of the things we'd want to see, of course, is your results on what you find reported back here at some point so we can understand what's going on, too. And then I will tell you, I do like two things particular about this proposal, and one of them is we're looking at an alternative crop that we haven't looked at before for ethanol production. That's wood products and other biomass found in the northeast part of the state. And secondly, probably our future members at times we want to look at with cellulosic products. It's probably going to be difficult to understand how we transport, store, and handle these products. But when we have smaller, this is a 1 to 4 million gallon plant, smaller community-based projects may be part of that answer in the future, and you're addressing that for us. So I think that's interesting in itself. Representative Heigerker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I know we visited on this before. First of all, a lot of you do not realize over at Net Lake, they have a school. The tribal school out there is one of the best in the nation, as far as getting results and everything going. In fact, they got people from outside the district opening and rolling to go there. So I know that they'll use the funds very well. But what I like about it is the funds are not going to the university. They're going to where the product is. And I like that. And I think this is a good concept. It doesn't take away from what we're doing with ethanol with corn.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we heard this in the Energy Committee, I think, and we heard another one yesterday in this White Earth. Basically, similar projects, a little bit different, but my suggestion to help the authors of the bill and help the supporters of it is to not just restrict it on line 1.15, ethanol or butanol, not just restrict it to those. And we had IRE come in, the Institute for Renewable Energy and Environment, come in to testify yesterday on that bill, and they agreed with my thoughts also, not to restrict it to that, but to study all biofuels, basically. So not that I want to make an amendment, Representative Dilbert, we'll...
Pardon me? Well, Representative Mayor, that was the amendment, I
okay.
think.
We did that, Ben?
We removed that and just put biofuels or bioenergy in
okay.
place.
Okay.
You're in good shape. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, one of the things that is real attractive to me about this project, other than, of course, it's within my district, so that's certainly attractive, but one of the things about this project is that imagine a corn farmer that owned an ethanol plant on his own. He owned the whole plant, and he owned all the land that it took to fuel that plant. Think of the opportunity there. Well, you're looking at an organization that it wants to build a demonstration facility for a new type of biofuel, a new type of bioenergy, and they own all the land to produce all of the crop to fuel this plant, by and large. Now, granted, they are going to try some other alternative strategies as well, but they have the resources in-house to fuel this size of a facility. They don't have to go outside of their own community. So in terms of having jobs and opportunity for not only for the biofuels portion of this and the bioenergy portion, but they also have the opportunity to employ their people to harvest the trees, to do the gathering, to do the transporting, all within the boundaries of the reservation. Not that they will exclusively do that, but this is a big opportunity for this particular organization that I think that is something, an item of focus that we need to be looking at.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dill, just for clarification reasons, the information that is received from this feasibility study, will that be made public free of charge?
Is that public information? Mr. Chair.
Representative Dill.
Representative Hamilton, that will be brought back to the committee and reported back to the committee for the committee's edification.
Right. And in fact, Representative Hamilton, I think that's an important point, that all grants that we give out now or in the future, I think we need to share that information by bringing reports back here or finding another mechanism for reporting so that it is a bit. I agree. We're giving out public monies for public research and discovery, and we should benefit from that. Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Dill. Your bill will be laid over for consideration.
Thank you very much, sir.
Representative Beard. We will. Representative Beard, unlike the previous author, I have nothing negative to say about you at all. And I will move your bill. Representative Beard is a co-author. House File 2051 is before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Beard, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair, if I may have a point of personal privilege before
sure.
I get started. I'm honored to have today with me four seniors from Shakopee High School who are shadowing me to see just what it is I do down here for all the money that the taxpayers back there pay me.
Did you guys wave so we can see where you are? All right.
Rachel Wright, Adam Armstrong, Dan Kramer, and Evan Gillick are here following me around today. So members, please be on your best behavior. Throw me only softball questions, and I'd appreciate it to make me look good.
Very good, and welcome to the committee. We hope you enjoy your day at the Capitol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the indulgence. Remember, several years ago, I think you remember, we started through this process with some rather routine and technical language enabling an energy, electrical energy facility to be built in conjunction with the RAR Malt factory in downtown Shakopee. RAR is, I believe, the oldest continuously operating company in the state of Minnesota, being founded here in 1842. They are one of the largest, if not the largest, malt house in North America. In fact, one of my testifiers, Mr. Paul Kramer, I don't think is here this morning because I heard they got a surprise visit from Anheuser-Busch. You want to keep Anheuser real happy. So Paul's off taking care of Anheuser-Busch. While joining me today is Mr. Stan Ellingson from the Midwakanton Sioux community, which is a joint partner in the Coda Energy project, what we're talking about here this morning. Actually, we're not going to talk exactly about Coda Energy. What we're going to talk about is the unsexy part of the whole biomass project. And that is the transportation and handling and preparation of the fuel, the feedstock, whether we're grinding it for gasification, fermenting it into cellulosic products of one sort or another, or in the case of Coda Energy, actually processing it to blow it into a boiler and run a combined cycle a turbine for generating heat for the process of making malt and electricity to sell back into the grid, about 16 megawatts. Oh, by the way, which does count towards the renewable energy standard. Folks, somebody has to set the standards for how we handle this stuff and process it. I know in our excitement to think about what's just over the horizon, we don't think about the mundane stuff of somebody actually collecting this stuff and hauling it around. But think about it. Are we going to shoot in stalks and leaves? Are we going to do round bales, square bales, long bales, thin bales? Are we going to grind it and make it into a powder? What consistency does it have to be? All these things need to be thought about, and that's what our friends at Coda Energy are proposing with this bill. On a 3-to-1 basis, they're proposing a grant from the Commissioner of Agriculture, where we're going to have Gene being really busy here with this stuff. And I think that the previous two bills are a great segue into what we're talking about here this morning, because it proposes that we grant the Commissioner of Agriculture some money to have a stake in this process so that our friends at Coda Energy, RAR Malt and the Midwakanton Sioux community, can develop a silo, if you will, a fuel depot somewhere in Scott or LeSueur County, it specifically states in this bill, that will develop the processes and the standards for how we collect whatever kind of grass or agricultural product it is we're going to collect, how we treat it, how we process it, and how we transport it, in this case, to the Coda Energy Project in Shakopee. But because you now have public money in it, the standards that are developed become public domain, and this kind of a footprint, this kind of a process or standard can be duplicated all over the state. And the folks that I represent, proudly I might add, are willing to take the lead on this because their project is ready to go. As soon as MPCA permits are issued, hopefully here in April, we'll have a little ribbon cutting, a little party down there in Shakopee, and we'll invite you all. And then they're on their way with building a world-class biomass cogeneration facility. And with that, they've got to figure out how we're going to feed this thing. Mr. Chairman, I hope I didn't overtalk it because I need to say leave something for Stan Ellingson to talk about. So if I can introduce my witness, I'd be happy to do that.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Stan Ellison. I'm the Land and Natural Resources Manager for the Shakopee Sioux Community. I think I'll talk a little bit about CODA itself, because Representative Beard did talk a lot about what I was going to say, but that's fine. It's a biomass generation plant. It's cogeneration. It's about 80% efficient. It's an extremely high efficiency, and it's designed to burn dry biomass. The original impetus behind the project was that raw malting itself has approximately 50,000 tons of dry biomass waste material available on site as a byproduct from their processing. This facility will burn 170,000 tons of dry biomass a year. That will generate 19.5 megawatts of baseload renewable energy, 16 net out. It generates 125 million BTUs of thermal energy that will be used by RAR. It avoids the burning of 1.1 million cubic feet of natural gas. That's enough to heat about 11,000 homes. It provides a lower and less volatile heat cost for RAR, therefore keeping them in business, which keeps the jobs in Shakopee. The electricity generated will either be purchased by the partners, the community and RAR, or will be sold on the grid as green power to one of the utilities. The biomass fuels that we're starting up with include RAR's 50,000 tons. We've located another source of biomass-type agricultural byproducts in the seven-county metro area, but the plant was specifically designed to burn dedicated energy crops, what's become popularly known as the cellulosic material, grasses, basically. The issue we have is that there aren't any, and that's been stated several times here today, that people just aren't growing them. And farmers are businessmen. They won't grow something unless they can sell it. And we can't buy it unless they grow it. So we need to get over that initial hurdle and get something going. We can't process it on the RAR site. If you've seen the RAR site, which is where the facility's at, it's in Shakopee. It's a fairly restricted site. It's surrounded by housing. We can't move 170,000 tons of dry biomass in there, grind it, and store it for a year. We need an off-site place where we can receive material as the farmers produce it, where we can process it and store it in a fashion that allows it to retain its ability to be burned. It can't be stored outside. It can't be stored on the ground. If it gets dirt mixed up in it, it actually will cause our emissions to exceed the permit values. So there's a whole host of issues that need to be dealt with on it. And as far as I believe Representative Beard did discuss the issue with the public-private information, if the state spends its money, the state gets the data, basically, because it's public money. And the point being that this type of biomass facility could be used almost anywhere in the state. Whether you're making cellulosic ethanol, whether you're burning it directly or gasifying it, you're still going to have to do the same things. So it actually becomes a transportable technology that can be used on a statewide basis. And if there's any questions, I can...
Okay. Questions, members? I do appreciate you coming, and I will say kudos to CODA for going ahead with the biomass co-gasification project. Again, they're doing it because they think it's the right thing to do. They think it's our future. They're doing it on their own at this point, members. But I do agree, we've got the ethanol folks sitting here in the audience and others. We have to figure out the supply depot concept and how we handle this material. And Representative Beard, I think this project is very timely right now and fits right in with what we're doing. I like what you're bringing to us here, and hopefully we can give you some consideration as we bring our bill forward next week. So any questions? Any final comments, Representative Beard? We're really easy on you because you got those kids here.
Certainly are. Thank you for the very good coffee, by the way. And members, this is, again, as we talk about the committees we serve on, I know biosciences and energy, we're talking a lot about the very things you're handling here, which is producing real business opportunities for the people who make our state work at a very foundational level. I'm glad, actually, that CODA Energy, the Midwaukee Community of RAR, are offering this to the public so they can kind of help set the standards and make it work for everyone else. And I'll be happy to be of any assistance I can. Thank you for considering
the
bill.
Thank you. House File 2051 will be laid over for possible consideration. Members, over here we have some more students that just came in. And to the audience, this is the 11th grade students from Bethany Academy in Bloomington, Minnesota. They are participating in the Minnesota Historical Society Capital Historic Sites Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government Tour and Educational Program. So I know we have a bunch of teachers on this panel for you 11th graders, and we welcome you, and hope you learned something today at the Capitol, other than it's great to be away from school today, I assume, right? So welcome to the committee. Next up, we have Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'd move House File 402 for possible inclusion in the omnibus agriculture bill.
House File 402 is before us. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And we do have an amendment, but apparently it's still in the revision process.
So we don't have that amendment yet.
It's on its way.
Okay.
But I'll...
Oh, it's probably my fault. It is my fault. Where's Bazicki? I didn't give it to anyone this morning. He took the... I remember now. It's my fault. Greg Bazicki met with me last night, laid down kind of a typewriter amendment in front of me, and I said I'd get it to Kate this morning, and I didn't do that. So, my fault. My bad.
While we're waiting, I'll try to address the bill a bit. Many of you heard this bill in the Ag Policy Committee. I just want to note to folks that my intent in this bill is a straightforward bill. I know people may be concerned that this may be a vehicle for other bills. I would give you my word that I have no intent of taking any amendments that would change the focus on this. As many of you know, I worked in the area issuing the licenses for pesticide applicators. And currently under Minnesota law, it says anybody applying a pesticide for hire needs to be licensed. What we're doing in this bill is focusing on antimicrobial pesticide application in homes. I don't have my testifiers here from my Senate district that had issues with mold in their homes. And what we have in our regime of certification and training and licensing in Minnesota and state law is to assure competency, to make sure that the folks who are applying a pesticide for hire are competent. We do that through measuring with testing and training that they have the education and the knowledge to know what they're doing properly. With our climate, with our construction, we have mold in homes, and mold in other buildings has been a great concern. There may be people who are doing applications. In the previous committee, I handed out copies from the Yellow Pages. You have companies that are out there applying antimicrobial pesticides to treat mold. And we've worked between the committees with the University of Minnesota, the Department of Health, and the Department of Agriculture. You will see a fiscal note in front of you that talks about the cost involved in completing this study. And it also, I think, is a good example of agencies and the university working together to come back with an important product that we can use to make sure that we have compliance and competency in the people who are applying antimicrobial pesticides for hire in Minnesota.
Does the department want to come down? Tell us what you think. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bazicki. Sorry about that amendment. And is this workable, doable? You're understanding the concept and on board with it?
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Greg Bazicki. I'm the Division Director of Pesticide and Fertilizer Division of the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, yes, it is workable. We have worked with Representative Hansen and the University of Minnesota and the Department of Health. We have a plan for a series of meetings on how to proceed with this, and we think it's appropriate. We support the amendment that provides some clear direction on what we are to look at, and since it is a very complicated issue, what areas that we would not delve into. So under those circumstances, we certainly support the amendment, and it's entirely doable, and we think it's an appropriate task for us.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Hansen or Mr. Bozicki, members?
Chair, we do have Department of Health here, too, if you'd like to hear testimony from them.
Well, if they're okay with it, then we don't need to hear from them. But is there anyone else in the audience who wants to testify against this bill or for it? Seeing none, what we're going to do is temporarily lay this over with some hands until we get the amendment, and then you'll be here. We'll pull it back up and amend it. At that time, if there's questions on the amendment, we'll answer it. And that way we can keep moving because we have 11:30 session today, members. Representative Peterson. Representative Peterson has a bill with explanation.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to get 1094 in front of the committee.
Okay. House File 1094 is in front of the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill as moved by Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill dealing with cellulosic ethanol development modeled after, I believe, most similarly the program around corn ethanol and the payments that plants have received and which most committee members are familiar with. It's one in another line or series of bills dealing with this topic. And I have another bill, which I believe the committee will be hearing shortly, House File 589, which has parts of this in it, but also has more for the gasification and the bioenergy side. And I'm hoping that the committee will consider parts of both or more of one or the other, Mr. Chair, as you put your bill together. But with me today is Bill Lee from the ethanol plant in Benson to give his perspective on the history of the ethanol producer payments. The plant in Benson has been around for a while, and what the future direction of appropriations in the state might want to consider outside of just a straight producer payment. So with that, if Mr. Lee could let us know what he thinks.
Yep. And members, Mr. Lee is here today, and I've asked if he has any comments on 589 that we'll hear tomorrow. He should mention them quickly today, too. And obviously, ethanol producer payments are something we're familiar with. However, we're struggling at this point trying to decide when and if we do them for the next generation. I will tell, I think, folks that have seen the Senate bill has put ethanol payments out into 2010 and 11, I think, as a starting date, perhaps. So we have to have that discussion in this committee, too. But we're counting on folks like Mr. Lee and others to give us guidance. So welcome to the committee, and introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thanks for having me here. My name is Bill Lee. I'm the general manager of Chippewa Valley Ethanol Company, Benson, Minnesota. I've been quite active here in the policy arena in my 12 years in Minnesota, but in 2004 and 5, I was chairman of Renewable Fuels Association and continue to serve on the executive board of the RFA, and so I'm quite involved in federal legislation as well. Minnesota ethanol producers, when we mingle amongst our fellow producers across the country, we're held a little bit in awe, and it's because of the things that happen here in Minnesota. I tend to lead the nation, and a lot of people ask me, how did Minnesota create this model industry and really kind of kickstart this thing? And I say, really, it was a combination of three factors. We had a lot of cheap corn. We had some entrepreneurial technology companies like Fagen, Broin, Delta T, and we had policy leadership from the Minnesota legislature. And as a result of things that happened back in the late 80s in this very body, it was a catalyst that created a farmer community-owned industry here in Minnesota, and it is, that infection, if you will, has spread across the whole country, and people are finally getting it from coast to coast. I say this to both compliment you and to challenge you to think about the future and what the potentials are with great creative leadership. I know you're struggling within your own financial constraints as you have to, but I'm trying to give you the big picture. This state is poised to lead a next revolution in biofuels, uniquely poised. Part of that unique is the creativity and strong bipartisan spirit that's in this legislative body, and this body can lay claim to being the catalyst that's created this biofuels phenomenon more than any other legislative body, including the federal legislative body in this country. So you should feel proud about that. Please don't lose sight of the huge impact that you can have going forward. Now, what we don't have is a lot of tangible results. It's a lot of these concepts, how you turn biomass into energy, how you turn biomass into biofuels, sound a little abstract right now, and they probably are, but many people have asked ethanol producers like myself in the last 4 months, what can the state do? What should the state do? And we have invariably come back and said a producer payment type program makes sense to us. That was a proven program that helped launch the corn ethanol industry and could be applied to conversion of biomass to both energy to displace natural gas and also cellulosic biofuels. We've got a lot of feedstocks, cellulosic feedstocks in this state. What we don't have right now is a lot of economically available feedstocks. There's research that needs to be done in terms of how to improve the efficiency and also the demonstrably sustainable collection of these materials. And a lot of that sounds like some of that work may be being done by others. And we're trying to work with the University of Minnesota and ORI to put together a program to do that and further that knowledge. But I don't want to understate the barrier that the technology presents to particularly to Minnesota ethanol producers. There is a risk in investing in this new technology, and one of the objectives of a producer payment program would be to do some level of risk sharing between the state and those entities so we can create a number of end users of biomass. And I think not only do we need to have more efficient and lower cost feedstocks, but we have to have end users to use those feedstocks, or we're not going to move forward. If we can do this, we will strengthen the 16 mostly farmer-owned ethanol facilities here in the state and help assure that these companies can remain competitive in a rapidly evolving ethanol industry. Thank you.
One question I would have, either for now or in the future, as we consider producer payments, understanding the two sides of the issue. Number one, when we committed to the original producer payments, it was for 10 years. I believe it did help you capitalize your operations. It gave that cash flow guarantee to bankers and financiers out there, and I understand that. Certainly, I think the new wave of producer payments talks about counter-cyclical language in years where you may not need that money. You maybe shouldn't get that money, and we should put it in other resources. Do you have a comment on what we should be looking at in the future as far as a straight payment over a period of time versus a counter-cyclical type payment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've discussed both concepts with a number of people who've asked, and both could possibly work. I would just contrast the producer payment, which is a payment for a result, versus a grant, which might be a payment to some new technology that may not bear any fruit. So if you would follow that analogy. We think we should be paid to actually produce something, and this would be an alternative to natural gas or gasoline. Counter cyclical risk sharing, from my perspective, would be a reasonable way to go. In terms of how do you budget that, I've heard from some folks that's a difficult thing to budget into the out years, but that could accommodate some of the risk sharing.
Okay. Any questions, members? Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, I think your comments about the counter-cyclical payments are certainly the way to go, Mr. Chairman, and that's evidenced by some of the public discussions we've had. In fact, we've had some bills introduced in the legislature this year to do away with ethanol payments. I think Representative Paymar's got one that I know for sure. Others may have more. I think without a counter-cyclical type of a program, Mr. Chair, we're going to get in that same spot. And you know, I agree with Mr. Lee. We are on the forefront of something that could be very, very good. And I think we need the public support behind it. And I think without some kind of a countercyclical program, we risk losing public support for an initiative that I think is key to us in the state of Minnesota here and key to our future. And we don't know what the future is going to hold. So.
Representative Welty.
To that point, Mr. Chairman, you know, some of the criticism that we have received within the ethanol industry is the subsidy in the past, and I'm just wondering what I've seen bills come forward that are along the lines of a revolving loan type of program to provide that initial capital that plants might need to get them up and off the ground. What, you know, as you look at the producer payments versus a type of a loan program, are the producer payments the best way to go? Have you looked at other options? Would loans help you out at all, or aren't those really going to help you cash flow in the initial years that you're in operation?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Welty, I suppose a loan program would be better than no program. I think the conservative opinion of the existing ethanol industry here in the state is a risk sharing where you're not outlaying funds unless there's an actual concrete product out there probably is a better investment for you and a better way to, we're taking on more risk as well than a loan guarantee program. I would also comment that the original corn ethanol producer incentive pay program essentially compensated the plants for 100%, roughly 100% of their investment over 10 years. I'm not sure that in the case of a thermal conversion technology that percentage of compensation is warranted. Something more in the third to 50% of the capital, that's something, and maybe more over a 5-year period than 10, that's something I would probably say would be more appropriate in this area. I would say that the technical risk to get involved in converting biomass to energy is a lower hurdle, however, than cellulosic biofuels. And in that case, perhaps a larger percentage of capital risk sharing would be appropriate.
Representative Welty, follow up.
Thank you, Chairman Junkin. Just to follow up with that, I really believe that we need to put as much support behind our renewable fuel infrastructure as possible. And what I'm hoping that we can do is take all of these ideas that we've had generated over the past session and put them together in a way that we build as much public support for renewable fuel development in the state of Minnesota. And if that's a little combination of producer payment or some of the other ideas that have been brought forward, I just want to see us put together a very good package that will bring public support.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On line 1.20, we talk about eligible producers. A question that I would have for the author is, to me, this doesn't mean Minnesota owned. I wonder if we've got anything in the bill. I see in the last page some other discussion about this too. Is there any stipulations in the bill, Representative Peterson, that requires Minnesota ownership? As I see it, this could be owned by people that aren't Minnesota residents. It could be totally owned by people that aren't Minnesota residents.
Representative Peters.
Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, that's a good observation. The owning, you could take out ag land or just own land in Minnesota. You know, you're setting up a definition that might not be the intent. And I believe earlier in the committee we had discussion on, you know, coming up with a definition that it does benefit Minnesotans, and I believe the chair has the desire and a time to help develop that this year in his finance bill.
And certainly, Representative Magnus, I think one of the other things we need to consider is, does it just have to be farmers? I think our new ethanol models now allow community members, people from your hometown, to invest, even if they're not a farmer, but they're a local owner.
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, I think that helps build public support for the efforts we're trying to do here. And so I am concerned that if we move forward with this, that we do look at local ownership and open to anyone, resident of Minnesota.
Yep.
I think we need to have something in there. So just some suggestions. I'm willing to work with Representative Peterson to put forth what we can do here, and you, Mr. Chairman.
If I may make
yep.
some closing. The way I understand it right now in talking with Mr. Lee is that it seems like the gasification and the replacement of natural gas is ahead of the actual fuel development. So I guess as we put the finance bill together, I would encourage that if we could get some aggressive timelines, maybe pay fiscal year 09 rather than 11, and also maybe in Representative Wiggins' committee, is to get some formal help at the Pollution Control Agency for permitting of these gasification facilities that that Mr. Lee has moving forward on, and is waiting, I guess as patiently as you can wait on the agency to basically catch up to the technology. And for the sake of the finance bills that are being put together, I hope we can use the opportunity to move forward on gasification while we still discuss the actual fuel side being developed, because the gas seems to be ahead of the fuel at this point, which helps the energy balance on corn ethanol as corn ethanol expands, which helps the public be more accepting of corn ethanol, because we all know it gets beat up once in a while from sources maybe not as familiar with corn country as they maybe should be.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Peterson. We'll see you tomorrow on another bill, and but you should be here anyway because you're a member of the committee. So appreciate it. We'll lay this file 1094 over for possible inclusion. Now we are moving to Representative Faust and putting on our Veterans Affairs hat, members. A lot of hats in the audience. Welcome to our Veterans Affairs folks here. Welcome, Representative Faust. Representative Faust moves House File 1901 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Do you have an amendment for that line 1.6, Representative Faust?
I do, Mr. Chair. I would also like to add an amendment on line 1.14, and let me do that one first, and if I can, I'll put an amendment in later on for 1.6.
Okay.
So in 1.14, after reception, add cross out following and put in there and other expenses of. So the sentence would read, the commissioner may also use a portion of the appropriation to pay for reception and other expenses of the dedication.
Okay. Does everyone have that amendment as moved by Representative Faust? Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? It's adopted. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for hearing this bill. I have with me Christine Keel, who is the brains in the organization behind this, and my only role is to increase the average age a little bit. But the idea for this bill came from when we toured the Veterans Administration building, and we were on the fifth floor, and we looked out over the World War II memorial. And we talked about on June 9th on the date that it's going to be dedicated. And I was thinking to myself that I had to find a way to get all of the World War II vets from my district to get to that dedication, because this is the last chance that they will get to be honored. And a little while after that, I thought, well, why am I being selfish? I should really find a way to get every veteran from the entire state there. This is our last chance to honor them, to show our appreciation for what they've done. In Christmas of 2005, I spent part of the day at a nursing home in Mora, and I was visiting people that didn't have anyone else to come and visit them, and one of the people I visited with was a gentleman by the name of Bill Campbell, who fought at the Battle of Pearl Harbor, and I want him to be able to attend this dedication. And he's in a wheelchair, so it's not going to be easy or cheap to get him here, but we need to find a way to get him here. Some of the handouts that you have, the first one I'll show you is one that looks like this. It's a spreadsheet that shows how many World War II veterans there are in each county today. These are estimates. They're not exact. On the front page, you've got how many? Oops, I'm sorry. I maybe handed out the wrong one. But you've got the total by state, I guess, not by county.
Yep.
And that one I don't think I have here. There were approximately 400,000 service men and women from Minnesota that fought in World War II. And the estimate is that there's approximately 50,000 of them left today. And we are losing over 2,000 per year. This dedication, this memorial, should have been built 50 or 60 years ago, but that's not what happened, and so we need to do the best we can today. So back to this, you can see how many veterans there are left by age group. The majority of those are from World War II. The next handout is World War II Memorial Dedication. It has dollar numbers. My concern, and the reason I didn't want to put a number in there right away, is I don't know what things state government should pay for and what they shouldn't. And so I'm relying on the rest of this committee to help me figure that out. For example, I have a little bit of a hard time paying for fireworks displays, but it would be a good thing to have. So, you know, that might be something that private sector can provide funds for. So I'd like some input from the rest of the committee to figure that number out. The other handout you've got is a schedule of events that will happen that day. And so I guess that you can read through that as well as I can read it to you, so I won't bother with that. I guess that's pretty much it. This is going to be, we hope to make this a big event. Like I've said before, the men and women that fought in World War II did so much, not just for our state, but also our country and the entire world. This is our last chance to honor them. This is our last chance to bring them together. And I think that we need to do everything we can to get as many of them at this event as possible and to make this event worthy of the sacrifices they've made. So, thank you very much. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
No. Nothing to add. You're there for questions.
Exactly.
Thank you. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually reside in Spamtown, USA, and I'm wondering if you're going to be providing or having any spam at this event, because spam is a big, had a lot to do with World War II, and if you've approached, in a maybe more serious or different note, if you've approached the Hormel Company, I'm not going to say that they're going to provide anything, but have you approached any other private businesses or companies to help assist with this?
Yes.
Representative Faust.
Yeah, thank you. And we actually did talk about contacting Hormel, and somebody is in the process of doing that. On that note, Stalin actually commented that if it weren't for spam, we never would have won World War II. So it certainly is an important thing. So we're hoping that that is a part of it, but we haven't heard back from them yet. We have done some contacting, or there will be some contacts to the private sector to raise funds, but and we're still too early in the process to know how much we will get from that. And so the money that we allocate for this is what I would like to see as a last resort. Hopefully we're able to raise a significant part of the money through private contributions, but I want to make sure that we can do it one way or the other, and so that's why I think it's so important. Another part of the numbers that makes it so difficult is at this point in time we have no idea how many people will attend. We will use the county service officers to try to get an estimate as we get closer. We don't want to guess how many lunches, and if we guess 30 and there's 90,000 people that show up, or if we guess 30 and 10,000 people show up. So we need to get as close as we can on those numbers, and we'll use the county service officers to try to get an estimate of how many people will be there.
And hopefully everyone had a good experience with spam. Representative Poppy, my father came home from the service and said he'd never eat liver again because of the green liver he was served in the Army, and so he never ate liver again. Hopefully spam.
Spam doesn't turn green.
And maybe we'll get some of the white hats up here. Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that note, too, I would contact Shell's Brewery, too, because I know Shell's Beer has played a part in many people's lives that are affected by this.
Which is in Representative Finstead.
That's right. That's right. Mr. Chair, to the actual appropriation, the dollar amount, Representative Faust, I understand your comments on the fireworks display. $100,000 is what is on this spreadsheet. I mean, without putting too much humor to this, I mean, that's literally watching tax dollars go up in smoke.
Right.
So I, you know, just took the $100,000 out, and we're roughly looking at then at $500,000. Is that the number you'd feel comfortable putting that in? And if you'd be comfortable with that, I'd be willing to move the $500,000 number, but I want to get your feeling on that first.
Yes, thank you, Representative Pinstead. And that was actually the number that I originally started out with, that I thought that would be able to do everything that we needed to do. When we actually started putting the numbers together, and again, we get into the problem guessing how many people are going to be there at this point. As we get closer, we'll be able to nail that down a lot closer. But for now, I'd be very happy with
Representative Pinstead moves on line 1.6 that the blank be filled in with $500,000. Any comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? It's adopted. Thank you, Representative Finstead. Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, what's your intent with the, how to move the bill forward? Is your intent to move it on its own? I know, Mr. Chairman, our deadline, or our completed date is May 21. If we're going to have this on June 9, it's cutting the time pretty short. I don't know, Mr. Chairman, if we should move this bill on alone or how we should do it.
Representative Magnus, perhaps that's a good suggestion. We'll move this bill back to finance, and so it's standing alone, and then we can also put it as a second vehicle in our omnibus bill, so you have two paths in case we need it. That's okay with you.
That'd be great. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Good suggestion. Representative Faust changes his motion and recommends that House File 1901, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It's adopted. Congratulations, Representative Faust, and we're moving on.
Thank you very much.
Representative Hawes, we got about 5 minutes before we have to scamper, but we want to give you an opportunity to... And we have to amend Hansen's bill, which shouldn't take long. Do we have that amendment?
Yeah.
We do. What's his bill number? Where's the amendment? We get the pages to hand out that amendment while Representative Hawes is talking to us. Representative Hawes moves that House File 1771 be considered for the omnibus bill. Representative Hawes.
Thank you very much. One of your committee members would have to move that, but I'm sure that is fine with me.
I'll move it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. House File 1771 is really a collection for the Veterans Service Board's programs, and it's coming from the governor's office, and a bill is also being carried by the chair. So we've moved this forward or move it to the side, which is ever fine, as long as the programs are moved forward. As a county commissioner, I grew to really appreciate the veterans service officers. They worked hand-in-hand with the commissioners and served an awful lot of people. I would like to highlight just one of the areas that was put in last year, and that is the campus rec veterans officers, and that has really made a difference on the students on the St. Cloud State campus as well. And there is that money and a little bit of increase. I have an expert witness for us today that can answer questions or give you an overview, and that is Commissioner Clark Dyrud. Commissioner?
And Commissioner Dyrud, I think we've heard most of this in your previous testimony, but if there's certain areas you'd like to highlight for us again as we move into the actual point of where we're writing this bill, we'd appreciate your comments and welcome.
Thank you, Chair Junkie. My name is Clark Dyrud, Department of Veterans Affairs, and you have been most patient in listening to me on more than one occasion, so I would just be here to answer questions. I think you've heard the whole sermon.
Members, if you have questions, I'd also recognize Representative Severson is here. He's worked very closely with Representative Hawes and committee members here. We appreciate that. I think you folks are familiar, but we want to get it officially in front of us here and make sure that we had an opportunity to ask any last questions on this portion before we... And there'll certainly be opportunities for testimony, Representative Hawes, Severson, and Dyrud next week as the bill comes out and we see what's in there and offer amendments or commentary at that time, too. Representative Heigerkin.
Representative Junkie, and I don't know if I should do it. I don't want to do it to Representative Hawes without his knowing
Can you bring Severson down then?
Yes.
If it's going to be nasty, I can switch off here.
It's not going to be nasty. Representative Haas, and we met with you, Commissioner, I think, at one of the meetings. We've had Representative Tremba had a bill up earlier with depleted uranium. Okay, there's other issues coming forth other than the federal right now, and there's programs coming forth. And I would like to offer an oral amendment to the bill at some time, appropriating $1 million each year for any federal programs that are coming forth, whether it be Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, or there's so many different programs coming forth. I'd like to see a grant available each year. I have a facility over at Sauk Center that we've been meeting with. The veterans are very, very interested in this as a possible outreach. But we need a funding mechanism to, it's got to be a state agency to oversee those funds for those possibilities, those federal funds coming forth. And I don't want to see this facility also lead to another state because we didn't plan for it. So I'm just looking for just some kind of an area, whether it be for Representative Tremba's idea, for any other ideas we've had. We need to have some money laying there where we can use whatever federal funds are coming forth, rather than also, no, we didn't appropriate or it's going to go someplace else.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hiker, can I? One of the best ways to distribute money is to through competitive grants, because mm-hmm. by the end of it, you know exactly that you have a really good product in front of you, mm-hmm. especially if the criteria for the grant is well established. Mm-hmm. But let me see what Commissioner Dyrud has to say.
Okay.
Commissioner, any comments now, or is that something we can work on here over the next week with Hiker? Can it see what we can't do?
Chair Tunkey, I think...
You always like to match federal dollars if you can and get it into our community?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure of what sure. is being proposed in the amendment, so I'll just assume...
I do understand what you're saying, Representative Hiker, and let's work on that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right, seeing no further questions, your bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Haas and Severson, thank you. Commissioner, appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Committee.
Members, quickly, I'll bring Representative Hansen moves House File 402 back up here to the table. And he has amendment that you were just distributed, the 457X.
I would move the 457X amendment.
Okay. Basically, this is what you and the department, I believe, have agreed on as far as a workable product to that bill.
What the amendment does is results from the Department of Ag and the Department of Health working together to clarify and make sure we have a very tight study. So I would encourage adoption of their work.
Any questions on that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That is adopted, and the bill 402 is laid over for inclusion. Representative Otremba moves approval of the minutes from the Wednesday, March 14th meeting. Any discussion of that? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That is adopted. Members, 5 minutes to session. Thank you. We'll see you tomorrow for another plateful of bills. Meeting's adjourned.